to guard the victory, to keep the peace. The mission of your AAF. In cooperation with the American Broadcasting Company, your Army Air Forces from air bases around the world present the continuing story of America's AAF. This program is an official military operation of the Army Air Forces and is brought to you for contact with our airmen overseas. Tonight we take you to
Paris to attend a GI university for American airmen overseas.
New York City to meet the editor-in-chief of this month's magazine.
Boca Raton, Florida, for an inside picture of how night fighters use radar.
And as always, we bring you the all-soldier orchestra and singing voices of the AAF.
First away, it's a musical salute to one of our allies, the tough jungle-conquering Australians who corralled the enemy in Borneo, New Guinea, and the Solomons. Their marching song, Waltzing Matilda. As peace came to the world, the Allies lifted the veil of wartime secrecy on radar, a scientific development in electronics that gives our fighting men a sixth sense in battle. Radar enables our airmen to bomb targets obscured by clouds or darkness. Radar warns us of the enemy's approach by sea and air. Radar gives vision to our night fighters as they creep unseen upon enemy planes and ships. To give you a picture of how radar works, and to show the split-second timing that exists between radar teams, we have set up our wire recorder in a radar training station at Boca Raton Army Airfield, Florida. Over.
This is your AAF reporter, Sergeant Jack Lescooley, speaking from Boca Raton Army Airfield in Florida. This field, commanded by Brigadier General Michael F. Davis, is the Army Air Force's largest radar training station. Radar, the cabalistic word whose meaning is life to American airmen and death to our enemies in the air, on the ground, and on the sea. This week, after years of secrecy, some of the facts of radar have been revealed at this training command installation. The story of the night fighter plane tracking down enemy aircraft for the kill through the use of radar has now been told. But the amazing relationship of radar operator to pilot and this blind flight team has until now been known only to airmen. To bring you the voices of one of these teams under night fighter training conditions, we have set up our wire recorder beside the training device which accurately simulates combat operations. Lieutenant Jack L. Freed of New York City, instructor, will track down an enemy plane whose maneuvers are controlled from behind the panel which obscures it from his sight. Lieutenant Herbert Schwartzman, also of New York City, will be his pilot, blindly obeying his instructions until Lieutenant Freed has brought the enemy plane into visual range. Two mechanical devices on wheels, known as crabs, simulate the two planes. And as they start to move, let's pick up Lieutenant Freed's voice reeling off instructions as he stares at the fine green lines moving across his radar scope.
Contact. Turnport. Line ourselves over the target at the 8,000 foot mark. Steady on the turn.
Steady, Eddie.
Got the target out there at 8,000 foot. Now, on a dead ahead position and 10 degrees above us. Looks good from here now as we come on down from 8. Increase speed 20.
Increasing 20.
And we'll give us our speed of closure. We'll bring it up nicely now. It comes on down 2,700 foot. Still a dead ahead position. No evasive action at the present time. Turn gently starboard.
Gently starboard.
Turn hard to starboard.
Howdy yet.
Hard is moving over to starboard side. Harder yet.
Harder yet.
Hard as possible.
Hard as possible.
That'll do it. The target is racking over to starboard side. We've established the rate of turn and moving right around with them. Coming on over to start. Ease off on it.
Easing off.
Ease off again.
Easing off.
And steady it up.
Steady, Eddie.
And turn gently port.
Gently port.
That'll be our counter turn. Moving over to port now. Steady on it.
Steady.
That'll bring him into 7,000 feet right smack in a dead end position. Still 15 degrees above us. He moved up 5 degrees. Up gently 200.
Going up 200.
Roger on that. Call out on your level. We got him now moving on down to 6,000 feet. Established a rate of speed enclosure, 20 miles an hour, coming on down very nicely now. No trouble at all. No indication the target knows where we are. He's moving
up
on down.
200 level.
Roger on that. We got that level in there now. We got him back down to 10 degrees above us. That's where we want him for the closure. Get him on our final 10 above us, and we've got him. He's still in a dead-end position, moving on down to 5,000 feet. Still low base of action. We know where he is. Coming in now. He's dropping on down now very rapidly. Throttle back 10.
Throttling back 1-0.
Roger. Target dropped on down to 4,000. Moved on down to 3,000 and still in a dead ahead position 10 degrees above us.
Speed set.
Roger on the speed set. That's exactly where we want to. Right smack out in front of us. And now we go into our final approach. It flows in for the kill. We got a target right smack out in front of us now. No trouble at all as he drops on down to 2,000 feet. Coming in on our final approach. Start looking out and up. Out and up here. So coming on down to 2,000 now. Moving out of 1,500. 1,400. 1,300. Coming in very nicely. Still dead ahead. Turn the only port.
Turn the port.
Moving out of port. We come out of this on the steady. It'll be right smack out in front of you. Steady on it.
Steady, Eddie.
That'll bring it right back into a dead ahead position right down there now at the 1,100 foot mark. Moving on down to 1,000 feet. He is still 10 above us. That looks like it's going to do it. Start looking out and up. Closing right in on him. He doesn't know where we are. We know exactly where he is. Right smack out in front of us. Moving on down 900 feet. Do you see him?
No joy.
No joy. I'll Roger on that. No joy. Coming on down to 800. Moving down to 700. Now 500. You can touch him. He's right smack out in front of him. Let's get him. Do you see him?
Tally-ho, tally-ho. He's right outside the windshield, boy.
That is what you might hear on the intercom of any American night fighter in action anywhere in the world. Thank you, Lieutenant Jack L. Freed, and thanks to you, Lieutenant Herbert Schwartzman, for this demonstration. This is your AAF reporter on Boca Raton Field, Florida, returning you to the fighting AAF.
While the terrible memories of war grow dim with the years, many pleasant recollections will linger with millions of American soldiers. Such memories as the beauty of April in Paris. many months you have listened each week to the Fighting AAF, bringing you eyewitness accounts of combat from the air fronts beyond the battlefields. Tonight marks a milestone in this program, for the fighting is done. Our program will continue, however, but this phase of our mission has been completed. This week, the Association for the Promotion of International Understanding has acclaimed the AAF program as the most original in theme to come out of the war. It is our privilege at this time to present the Executive Secretary of the Association for International Understanding and Editor-in-Chief of this month's magazine, Mrs. Ada Siegel.
The editors of the magazine this month deem the Fighting AAF the best and most original radio program to come to the network since the beginning of World War II. It has succeeded in giving those of us at home a glimpse of the reality of the struggle now completed. And I am most happy, Major Frederick Brisson, to present to you this plaque in appreciation of the outstanding achievement of General H.H. Arnold's The Fighting AAF.
Thank you, Mrs. Siegel. It is an honor to accept this award on behalf of General of the Army H.H. Arnold, Commanding General of the Army Air Forces. The credit for winning the award must go to the many officers and men who have worked to make the program possible. Typical of them is the AAF correspondent who reported our B-29 missions over Japan. A winner of the Air Medal has just been flown back from the Pacific and is waiting now to speak to us from San Francisco. Come in, Sergeant Hal Brown.
If any of our other combat reporters were here tonight, they would say the same thing. The talk should not be of the job we have done, but the job done by the crewmen who flew and fought our planes overseas. It was a privilege for us to fly along with them and report their courage in the face of danger. It was a privilege to see firsthand the kind of men who make America.
Thank you, Technical Sergeant Hal Brown. We return you now to New York.
His walk is jaunty and there is joy in his song. For this time it will be forever when Johnny comes marching home.
Hooray, 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 hooray. Hooray, 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 hooray. When Johnny comes marching home again, hooray, hooray. The people are gonna gather round from near and far. Ladies' hearts will be in a whirl, wind up stealing the sergeant's girl, and they'll carry on when Johnny comes marching home. When Johnny comes marching home. Johnny, 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 Johnny,
great jubilee there will be when Johnny
Johnny comes marching home again. Hooray, hip, hip, hooray. We'll be giving him such a welcome then. Hooray, hooray. Where's the medal for bravery? You earn a smile for the crowd to see. I'll feel gay when Johnny comes marching home. When Johnny comes marching home. Hooray, hip, hooray. When Johnny comes marching home.
Yes, Johnny has started home from the air fronts all over the world. Bringing him home will not be an overnight task, but meanwhile, he is not forgotten. The Army Air Forces provide both recreation and education for the men who must, temporarily, remain overseas. In GI universities, college credits may be acquired for courses in almost every subject. In the Pacific, these GI classrooms are often out of doors on island beaches. But in Europe, the leading universities of the world provide background for our soldiers' education. To visit one of these universities overseas, AAF wire recorder moves now to the Sorbonne, Paris. Over.
This is your AAF reporter, Captain Howard Finch, speaking from Paris. Today, throughout most of the European continent, school bells are ringing for G.I. Joe and Jane. And some 200,000 of your soldiers are answering those bells. Yes, they're going to school. Taking advantage of the Army's recently inaugurated gigantic educational program instituted in Europe by the United States Army Information and Education Division. We're visiting today one of the world's most famous halls of knowledge, the Sorbonne in Paris. This historic university in the Latin Quarter on the left bank of the Seine is rich in educational tradition. And for the first time in history, its long corridors echo with the hurrying tread of Army brogans. For here, your soldier is studying such subjects as French history, sociology, and many others. And what's more, he's really enjoying the benefits to be derived from higher learning. This morning in this typical Sorbonne classroom, a group of Army Air Forces men are starting a course in the French language. Their instructor is Madame Mousseau. And we're going to eavesdrop for a moment and see how they're progressing as one student gets ready for an initial recitation.
Ah, bonjour, madame.
Bonjour, Lieutenant Harrison. Qu'est-ce que vous avez préparé aujourd'hui comme littérature?
Oh, j'ai préparé La mort du loup d'Alfred Vigny.
But now tell me, the student, incidentally, was Lieutenant James H. Gillison, lead bombardier with the 94th Bombardment Group of the 8th Air Force, in his hometown of Chicago, Illinois. Madame, how did he do? I mean, how was his recitation this morning?
Vous avez fort bien récité ces morceaux, et vous devez continuer à apprendre par cœur quelques poésies françaises.
Very good indeed. Thanks a lot. But you know, this class and this classroom represents just an infinitesimal part of the information and education program now in full assembly in the ETO. But we're going into the next room to let men who are qualified to tell you more about this program come to the microphone. First, the Chief of the Information and Education Division, Brigadier General Paul W. Thompson of Alliance, Nebraska. General Thompson.
The incident which has just taken place at the Sorbonne typifies one phase of our Army education program, a phase which we call training within civilian agencies. Instead of the Sorbonne, we could have taken you to Oxford, or Cambridge, or Nancy, or Grenoble. Or we could have taken you to one of the Army's own universities. We have two of them, one in operation now and one about to open. Each has an enrollment of 4,000 soldier students. The courses are 2 months long, and the instructors are top-notchers drawn chiefly from American universities. Biggest of all, at least biggest as measured in the numbers of soldier students affected, we have throughout the theater hundreds and hundreds of schools established by and maintained by the units themselves. We call these command schools. To support them, we have trained thousands of officers in a special staff school here in Paris. And we have distributed millions of textbooks. The units run the schools themselves, providing their own instructors, classrooms, equipment. We have here an officer who can tell us of a case in point. He is Captain John Reagan, an Air Force officer from Waterbury, Connecticut. Captain, where do your classes assemble near Nuremberg?
We're using a wooden barracks formerly used by the Germans, sir. Not very pretentious, but it's in a rustic setting and serves our group, 368 Fighter Group of the 9th Air Force, very well.
So, a rustic setting. That should give the boys an idea of the kind of country schools their grandfathers attended.
Thank you again, sir, and I'm sure that thousands of Air Force's men, as well as those of every branch, will be better equipped for future life as a result of your fine educational program. General Thompson, like the soldiers attending his schools, fought in the war in Europe and was wounded on D-Day at Omaha Beach. This is your AAF reporter returning you now to the United States.
Songs of war are fading into oblivion now, and our victorious armies are marching home to music they know and cherish. Cheerful music like Meet Me in St. Louis. Proclamation of the President, today was set aside as a day of prayer to mark the end of fighting in this war. In churches of every denomination throughout the land, Americans gathered to give thanks. Tonight also, soldiers of our AAF gather solemnly in strange and far-off places that so little while ago were battlefields. Gather in sober reflection on the tragic days just past, and in contemplation of the world ahead. Their prayers, multifarious, murmur awkwardly from lips still numb with pain and fear. They whisper on tropic winds that echo fervently across the world until the many voices become one. The many prayers, a single soldier's prayer for the hope of tomorrow.
God, make it real. Make it last. Not just for us, but for those who won't come back. For those who fell in alien skies. Make it a better world they died for. A world without fear, without hate, without prejudice. Where black men and red and yellow and white can live together in dignity. Free, with their faces in the sun and their heads high. Proud in the brotherhood of man. Please, God, let there be an end to suffering, and let there be peace for our children.
Program has been an official military operation of the Army Air Forces. Next week, over most of these stations, AAF teams operating at air bases around the world will again bring you fresh and first-hand news of the future of air power and the men in the AAF. This program has been brought to you as one of a series of service programs entitled Time for Americans, presented by the American Broadcasting Company and the belief that never did so many need to know so much. This is the American Broadcasting Company.